Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever and whenever you may be listening. My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the studio of eloquentonline.net in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and a long, long walk, but a short flight on the Millennium Falcon up to Charleston, South Carolina. South Carolina Federal Credit Union, their chief operating officer, we call him Dr. Troy Hall. Hey, Dr. Troy.
Hey, how you doing, Jason? I am very excited about today because we get an opportunity to talk about Strauss and Howe and their generational theory. And so, therefore, we get a chance to put some application to our Power of Performance show.
Absolutely. And the name of the show is The Power of Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? Brought to you by XDI, X-Ray Delta, India. com. They've been in business for more than a generation. If you might think you're paying too much for your statement services, check them out, xdi.com. And of course, just a couple weeks away from the Chili Challenge out in beautiful San Diego, California. And it's all right there on their amazing website, xdi.com. You heard Dr. Troy talking about the power of performance. You know, generations follow observable historical patterns and thus offer a very powerful tool to predicting what your audience is going to look like in the future. And in the world of banking, where it seems to change, Dr. Troy, every 15 minutes, that can be a tremendously powerful thing for your brand to understand. And it was several years ago when you first introduced me to the Strauss Howe generational theory. I was a little embarrassed at the time because, I'd made my career talking about generational marketing and generational management. But when I really dove into this, and it's very rare that I get fired up about theory, because as you know, I'm always talking about results versus theory. This thing really fired my imagination. Where did you first hear about this?
Well, for me, the introduction of that came through my PhD work at Regent University. And one of the things that I really wanted to do was to pursue, because I was interested in this whole generational aspect, just as a preview to that, for 5 years, four generations all served and worked together under the same household, which we fondly called the hallway.
Right.
And so with my mom and dad, and then my wife and myself, and then our son and his two children. And so for 5 years, we worked together representing those individual tendencies of the generations, and that really just sparked a lot of interest. And then as I began to read and understand more from what I knew from a business world perspective that would happen, we knew that the upcoming millennial generation would be an impactful workforce, and we knew that there was reason that we should be thinking about generational marketing and generational employment strategies and retention strategies and training strategies and begin to think about it. And it wasn't so much that we discounted it from the past, but as you may know, the way life evolves and with the evolution of technology, it became much more prevalent today than it would have maybe 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, when life's communications were different between each other, whether they were physical or whether they were through a virtual perspective. So as you know, 40 years ago, virtual perspective was almost non-existent at all for
right.
the normal individual. But today, it's now an intricate part of everything that we do. And so what that does is that all of a sudden it now zooms in. It's like, imagine that you're zooming in on a page, or you're taking your camera lens and zooming in. And what you're doing is now you're focusing on something that had been kind of a peripheral before, and now it's in focus. So all of this came as a result of my personal experiences raising four generations and my schoolwork, looking at it from my PhD in leadership and global leadership and entrepreneurship.
Yeah, so you would say that your real experience with your family reinforced your belief in the Strauss Howe generational theory.
Well, it did, and it began to have me think and investigate that. And what theory does is theory basically explains why something happens.
Right.
It begins to describe it a little bit, and begins to put it into some form of context. And that's what theory does. So someone said to me the other day, they said, oh, so when you wrote your dissertation, did you prove your theory? And it was great. I was able to go, well, no, because that's not what it's supposed to do. You know, it was like I had this like opening. All of a sudden, it became like, you know, I think sometimes folks are misunderstand that theory isn't proving right or wrong. Theory is only stating the observation of the phenomenon in a way in which you can make sense of the circumstances that are relative to it. So
absolutely.
You may not necessarily be able to use the Strauss and Howe generational theory and apply it to the financial world, but you could apply it to the behaviors of individuals in the financial world. And all of a sudden, that starts to make a lot of sense.
It absolutely does. So we talk about generational stuff on this show a lot. It is the key signature of the power of performance. The name of the show is The Fourth Turning. That's the name of the episode, because in addition to part of this theory is that a nationality has a four-part life cycle that is broken down into these generational parts, but that after four cycles, you have what is called a fourth turning. And if you go back in American history, you'll see that at very, very critical moments in our nationality, we were reaching the end, or coming to one of these fourth turnings. And I think it explains a lot about where we are now. It doesn't matter how you feel about the election. I think a lot of the things that we're seeing in the election this year are based upon the fact that we are in this fourth turning. Some of the time and tension and things that we're all observing and witnessing, I think, can be attributed to this. Like I said, it really did fire my imagination when I first started reading about it. And I've shared this with a lot of people in different industries and different businesses. So when we get back from the break, like I said, in the pre-show lead up to this, folks, this is like you getting an MBA class for free with Dr. Troy. He is the PhD. I am the GED, and we'll get started right after this.
A lot of credit unions are here, but if you're not here, you're not participating in something that credit unions ought to be here doing. We're raising money for charity, we're having fun, we're spending time together, and we're making some great choices.
It is Friday, the 22nd of July. When I put the episode title out there, The Fourth Turning, it sounds like one of those horror movies that comes out on Friday every week, seemingly. But it's not really scary. I find it far more interesting. For somebody who might be tuning into the show for the first time and has never heard of this, and they asked you, hey, Dr. Troy, what is the Strauss Howe generational theory? How would you describe it to somebody if you had just a few minutes to do so?
Well, it may be difficult to actually condense it to an 11-minute elevator speech, but
yeah.
Basically I'll describe the four turnings or the four aspects. And keep in mind that what this is overlaid on top of the concept of generations themselves, which basically last for a 20-year life cycle.
Right.
20 to 22 years, 20 to 25 years or so is the good makeup of a generation descriptor. So, for instance, when you're taking a look at the Gen Y group, which is what we've talked about before, the millennial group, you know, they span a 20-year birth cycle and then begin to impact affect the world around them. So in that beginning phases of those 20 years or so, they are gathering their impressions, their values, and
right.
moving it forward. So now, keeping that in mind, now we take a look at what was described in this theory as the four turnings. And so basically the first turning is what they consider high, and this is after a crisis. So guess what the fourth turning is? Crises. So this
right.
is where the cycle starts over again. So the beginning of this is a high, which comes after a crisis, and this is when institutions are strong and individualism is weak. The society is confident about where it may want to go collectively, but there's still some issues about whether or not individuals will conform. Now, an awakening is when you have institutions that are attacked in the name of personal or spiritual autonomy. This is when society is reaching a high tide of public progress. This has to do with, social discipline, self-awareness, spirituality. So some of that can happen in an awakening. And unraveling, the third of the turnings, is when I guess you could kind of think of it as the opposite of a high. Institutions,
right,
then, in this case, are weak and distrusted, and individuals are strong and flourishing. And then the last is crisis. And this is an era in which the institutional life is destroyed and rebuilt. And it is done so realistically as part of the way it's like the evolution. It's like nature's final, cleansing,
right,
it up, whatever tends to happen. And in this aspect of crises, people then begin to look for groups and larger groups to belong to and to be a part of. And this is similar to what I understand, because my dissertation emphasis was in group dynamics and understanding many social theories, such as the theory of belonging, the theory of identity, and other areas, in the social relationships. So if you look at these four categories, you can go back to the turnings and you can see that the turning of the high was right after World War II. So we're
right,
looking at the 40s and the 60s. The awakening,
yep,
you're looking at the 60s to the 80s. See if I get this right. Let me make sure I'm doing this right. 40s,
right,
the 60s,
the
80s.
Yeah.
So in the 40s is the high begins, the 60s is the awakening, the 80s is the unraveling, and the 2000s is the crises. And
right,
so this is, and what we are seeing today in the political arena is exactly this. What we have is a great divide in,
yep,
the group. Individuals taking a look at Democratic, Republican, other nominees, their candidates, how they feel about them has created a great divide, more so than before. And in this one, there's a lot of tension. This isn't just a public divide as in saying, well, do I want to vote on this candidate or that candidate? People are creating very strong opinions and very, divisive sort of opinions, I guess. They're
right,
dividing everybody in how they're looking at it. So in this case, this is where institutional life is being destroyed and with the opportunity to be rebuilt.
Exactly.
And so what's happening,
and
is
I want to make
sure
people understand,
election system is
exactly,
is potentially could be destroyed. Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
And I hope people understand, and I want to remind folks, if you're listening to the show in the archive, which is how most people listen to this show, you can rewind the show. If you're listening to it on your phone, you can go back 15 seconds at a time or whatever device you're listening on. The majority of people listen to the show on a mobile device, because sometimes this kind of thing can be hard to follow without, a flip chart or a keynote or a Prezi presentation, but you can go back. But listen to what Dr. Troy just said. He basically just described for you the historical chronology that most of us, at least in three generations, have been paying attention to most of our professional lives. And it is very, very interesting, because we are at that moment of turning to something else. And I feel it myself, here, regardless of how you feel about politics. You can, on both sides of the political spectrum, on the Republican side and on the Democratic side, we've seen some very interesting developments, a lot of which I think are underscored by some of these Strauss Howe generational theories. And if you want to look it up, you can just – it's right there in the show description. Just Google Strauss Howe and you'll find everything you need to online. I did want to ask you, because when I spoke professionally on generational stuff, people would always come up to me afterwards, and the number one question would be, what generation am I in? And I was always thinking, I just explained that for an hour. But anyway, was this one of the questions that people always had? If we are, as I believe, in this moment of crisis, does that not imply that we are about to turn the page to something better, or does it just mean that as of this moment, things are kind of following that predictable chronology? Or could it be that because of all the technology, because of all these different things that are happening, that the next turning is going to be something different than it's ever been before? Because it's the fourth turning in American history.
It is the fourth turning in the application, or what is implied is that if you follow the theory, then you'll return to a high. So
right.
Remember, the high occurs after the crisis. So the high that occurred in the 40s was after the World War, and there
right.
was a prosperity. There was an element of prosperity during that particular time. The awakening occurred in the 60s, and it was really began to be fueled by the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Absolutely.
And so think of the 60s in that area, and also Martin Luther King, and
yep.
a lot that was
the
done
civil rights
in
and everything.
That
yep.
civil rights movement. Then the unraveling occurred in the 80s, and this is when
And the 70s, the gas lines.
In the 70s,
all, yeah.
But mostly in the 80s, because what happened in the unraveling was the decomposition of monopolies and taking a look at like AT&T was decommissioned in the 80s
right.
around
That's
that
right.
time frame. I mean, somebody's probably going to be more particular than I will be on that exact date, but I'm talking conceptually here. And
right.
also banking regulatory issues. That's the Reagan era, and that's when he tried to take out the government from being so much in control and to decentralize that. So he was really unraveling a bunch of bureaucracy and things that were built up in that particular time period. I also will go back to the 60s and say in the term of awakening, when it talks about spiritual autonomy, if you recall, that is when the movement began to take prayer out of schools in
yep.
the 60s.
Right.
And so that happened. And then what I can tell you why we have maybe some hint as to the crisis turning into a high is that we're beginning to see much more attention given today into the disparity in the conversations of diversity and inclusion and racism and all of that is all trying to like solve itself so that it can begin to say, well, what is the new norm that we should have? How can we normalize this? How can we bring this into a high? And I do believe, unless I have misquoted this somehow or misread this, I do believe Mississippi has voted to put prayer back into school. And so I'm not saying that that is what's going to cause a turning. I'm just saying, take a look at that item and say, ah, this is what we're being set up for. We're being set
right.
up for the opportunity for the theory to actually happen. Now, keeping that in mind, a theory is not necessarily predictive. It just describes what actually is happening. It explains the opportunity for this to occur. The theory is not how much you want to believe in the theory isn't always dedicated to whether it actually acts like it does over and over and over again. But the theory, though, which in this case has been grounded with a tremendous amount of research, as most people would know, looking back, they went back to the 1500s and looked at generations and studied the generations over that period of time and built all of that into the program. And so, therefore, their theory could span over many years of dedicated research and observations. So
right.
this isn't like, oh, they just looked at the last 80 years and said, oh, you know what, let me just call these last 80 years what this is.
Well,
no.
That was one of the things that really impressed me about it. Yeah, that was one of the things that really impressed me. And, you know, Dr. Troy went back to World War II. If you track it back to the fourth turning before that, you find yourself at the crisis of the American Civil War. And, you know, I went to breakfast with my wife this morning, and I mean, everyone, I mean, it is just the nature of the season. You could just hear everyone at every table was talking about the convention. And someone had said to me earlier in the week, well, Jason, the country's never been more divided than it is now. And I said, you ever heard of the Civil War? Okay. History repeats itself. And history, you can always find in a free republic examples of living through things now that our ancestors have already dealt with. But when you go back to the Civil War was a remedy for problems that had been discussed and deconstructed and institutionalized going back to the American Revolution, which was the first fourth turning. So it is a fascinating. I really, really encourage people. I'm not a big reader. It's probably one of my professional weaknesses. I don't spend a lot of time reading journals. I spoke at over 400 credit union events as a professional speaker and never saw another speaker's presentation. So I'm not always the most eager person about acquiring new information. But the Strauss-Howe generational theory really did lay things out in a linear way. And of course, the power of performance, we always talk about Eloquent Online does things in the context of that 4-4 musical metrics. That's what I like about this. It breaks down the nationality of a country, in this case, the United States, where most of us are doing business, the way you would look at a life cycle. You know, you're a child, you're a young adult, you're middle aged, and then you're old. And I think a nationality has those patterns. And I think that was probably the most impressive thing about the theory to me, Dr. Troy, is that a lot of times when a pattern has repeated itself so many times, you can count on it. And I think that's one reason it really resonated with me.
It does. And one of the things that I want to add as a cautionary word to the individuals listening to today's power performance and listening to these words, and although we have set this up for the possibility of the cycle repeating, there are a couple of things to keep in mind. This generational theory applies to the United States. So this was looking back to the late 1500s in the United States. What is different today is the global market. This theory does not take into account today's technology and the impact of the global market and how it may impact behaviors and nuances of things that may change. What we may find is that these cycles don't take 20 years in order to accomplish. And the cycle is not associated with the generation. So it is important that people do not go, oh, so you're saying that this generation is the crisis generation. No, we didn't say that.
We
said is that we are in a we're looking at an 80 to 90 year cycle of behaviorism with all generations acting in those cycles and those turnings. So it means that in a crisis, each generation represented by those individuals for whatever numbers that happens to be are all participating in the turning. So it's real important that people do not go, just because I said in the beginning that a generational cycle is 20 years, that they automatically assume that we're now identifying, you know, the four previous cycles as the generations. No, those are the cycles in which all generations are acting at the same time.
Right, because you've experienced the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. So that's actually a good point of edification. We got 7 minutes left on the show. One other thing I really enjoyed about this is it lends what I think is a lot of what's the right way to say this? I think you can in banking and in marketing, so much of it is about predicting the future and predictive modeling. It talks about, you know, I'm 48. If you want to know what a 48-year-old is going to know 20 years from now, don't look at somebody who's 68, look at somebody who's 28. And it really does kind of give you that we are who we were thing that is, I think, very, very relevant in banking. And so as a person that's a professional in the financial marketplace, how do you or how have you or how would you advise people to take this generational theory to intentionally apply it in a positive way to their banking brand?
Well, I think that it's important to understand that the brand is going to be in this generational turning. And so if you think about it from that perspective and you go back and say, okay, well, you know, how do they define the crisis turning, you know, and that basically response, it's when institutional life is destroyed and rebuilt, and it's done so as a response to a perceived threat to the nation's survival. And so basically you have to understand that that's what your business is operating in that mode today. But it's only inside that turning. And so how much application would you apply to it? Well, if your business was about disrupting into the marketplace, you might say, you know, maybe I can apply some disruption theory or something to this. But the reality is you would be a disruptor whether you were in an awakening and unraveling or even in the high. So it really is immaterial. What I think is important is to better understand the behaviors of the consumers who make up your space and who make up the time frame by which your company is operating and in which your company will move into. So I think those are the kinds of things that you want to look at. So I think that what happens is people tend to want to dismiss potential information if it doesn't fit nice and neat into what they know. Because many times people only operate within the area of what they know. They never operate in the area of what they don't know. In that case, that's maybe if you're going to hedge your bets or you're going to do some speculative. But the general population as a whole doesn't speculate. The general population as a whole acts in what's predictive, meaning what am I comfortable and what can I see in front of me or what has somebody else told me is going to be the future and then I can just deal with it that way.
Right.
Very few individuals expand beyond and live in a world of saying I can somehow operate with information that I don't know yet, because it makes people very uncomfortable. As humans, we're uncomfortable. And it's probably a good thing because it lends to survival. Can you imagine what would happen if we just said, hey, I'd like to see what happens if I fell off a cliff?
Exactly.
I mean, where would you be? You'd be at the bottom of the cliff, okay?
Exactly.
And depending on how far the cliff was, would determine whether you got back up and tried it again, or you said, that's not for me.
That's funny. Now, I'll tell you what, when I started the show, we talked about a lot of generational things and credit union things, and we had Dr. Troy on before he was Dr. Troy, and then we would have these long conversations about things off the air, and I thought, man, I wish we had recorded that. And so that's what I kind of wanted today to be. We used to talk about these generational things, and I think if any business, candidly, healthcare, technology, banking and finance, whatever it is, I think is impacted first by generational things more than race and more than other aspects that people assign to their own individual makeup. But I've wanted to talk about this. Gosh, 2 years we've talked about doing this show. And I just felt like in between the two political conventions was a good time to do it because, again, it's not political. But I do think you're seeing some elements of the fourth turning manifesting themselves in both political parties and in what anybody who's been paying attention, as I have since the 1980s, really since 1976, has been one of the most unique election seasons that I've ever witnessed as somebody who is a historian and enjoys it. So I think I'm probably a little more actively engaged in it. But I would really encourage people to get out there and Google this and just look at it and see how you can apply it to the business or brand that you're in. And with less than 2 minutes, Dr. Troy, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think we pretty much summed it up. Just as a reminder that, you know, what we looked at today was a series of cycles and turnings that created a complete cycle of 80 to 90 years. Think back to it. Why does it make sense? Because the average life cycle of an individual lasts between 80 and 90 years. You can have outliers that go before that time, some say afterwards, but the general population, that's where the actuarial tables are built on for insurance quotes and insurance information. Built on how long do they think people will live. So what we've done is we basically said within your lifetime, you will experience these four. And only when you are born into the high does it work in a chronological fashion. It's a cycle, meaning that it's on a circle. So what happens is that you go from high to awakening to unraveling to crisis to high to awakening. So it rolls in that fashion. You do not, according to the theory, get to jump around.
Right.
And so you have to think about it in that particular fashion as to how it actually rolls and how it actually moves. Keep in mind that these turnings that represent do not reflect the name or the characteristics of the generation. They actually do a better job than that. They reflect all generations that are acting within that turning for within that 20-year period, and it allows you to understand the maturization process that occurs for generations that may have started in the high and ended in the crises. And you may then also understand what will it look like when individuals are born into a crisis mode, and how does it then go through that particular cycle. So those are the things that I would make sure that people were thinking about from an academic perspective. And I think that if they want to apply generational knowledge, they need to look at the behaviors of the individuals, the consumers or the clients or the people that they are trying to reach and to do business with. That is where they will find great power in impacting the performance of their company or the performance of the consumer or the performance of the employee.
Perfect. And that's why it's called The Power of Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? One way to make sure you do is to get your head wrapped around some of these generational theories and patterns. His name is Dr. Troy Hall from the holy city of Charleston, South Carolina, where even when it rains,
believe it or not, the sun is still shining.
Absolutely. And my name is Jason Dias from the studio of eloquentonline.net in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next we speak, we'll talk to you all next week. Take care. Bye now. As soon as I find the button, there it is.
The end of the MFO, folks.